We are ready to proceed with the meeting. I see members are here now. Now the rules require that at least there must be three members of the committee before the committee can deal with any business before it. But of course, if we are going to have to vote on something, there must be a quorum. But for any other business, we require three, so we're only two. That's why we had to ask the whip to look for members. One member from the ANC is around. We did get apologies from members from the DA. They had an emergency caucus this morning, so they are done. The shadow minister of environment affairs is in the house. Also, the deputy chair of this committee is acting in both capacities. An honourable Stan Camp is here. I guess Honourable Peden is on his way coming. So we are ready to start. we will first deal with the Waste Bureau, its establishment. We asked for an opinion in the past, which was presented. We couldn't finalize the discussion because the DG was not around, I think, and some of the questions that were being raised necessitated that she should be around so that she can respond to those questions. Hence, we postponed that item. So we'll deal with it this morning. And in the afternoon, just after lunch, we will be joined by the board of South African Weather Services. My indication is that almost all the board members except three will be joining us. The chairperson of the board, the new chair, Mrs. Nana Mahomola, she's traveling abroad, so she's not able to be part of the meeting. She has sent us a written apology. And we also have got an apology from Advocate Derek Block, who's also a member of the board, who unfortunately has got some issues that he had scheduled, adjudications, tribunal hearings, appeal set down, etc., for the better part of August, because this meeting was rescheduled. If you remember, before we went on constituency break, we were supposed to have received a presentation from the board, so they couldn't come, and then we had to reschedule it to today. So as a result, this board member was available then, but is not available now. In any case, I think his term of office is coming to an end at the end of August. I don't have an apology for another member. Okay. Yeah, because there was some indication that another board member, Professor, what's the name? Mukoto, yeah. But I'm told that she's coming. So all of them except these two board members. The rest will be joining us this afternoon. So there will be the portion of the engagement with the board that we will do it in committee on the some information which is confidential that relates to an employee of the board on the psychometric issues assessment and so forth. But the rest of the engagement with the board will be as normal processing of issues in Parliament, open to the public. Okay, let's start with the Bureau and welcome once more the DG and the rest of your team to take us through the presentation.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, honorable members. I have reported to the Chair that the DDG Legal Services Compliance and Enforcement, DDG Isham Abada, is not here. She had to go back to Pretoria because we had scheduled a meeting with all the provincial HODs, both on environmental management inspectorate matters, and we then continue tomorrow. So the chief director responsible for law reform, Ms. Linda Galip, is going to take us through the first part of the presentation, and we will then also have Mr. Andile Mvinjelwa, who is within the Bureau, to then follow through with the presentation, and I will make inputs in between myself and DDG Mark Gordon, and Nolwazi Tekane, who is the Executive Program Manager. Thank you very much. I would like to hand over to Linda first, because the first part, Chair, as much as the committee wanted me present, it's more a legal matter, not directly for me to respond to, but I will then be able to clarify how far we are with the setting up of the Bureau. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. You have received previously a presentation on the legal opinion, and what we have done now, we have went back to the records and actually look at why Parliament created the specific provisions in the Act in the manner that it was done. And that is what we will present today to you. On 13 March 2018, the Portfolio Committee of Environmental Affairs raised a concern regarding the Director General of the Department acting as a Chief Executive Officer of the Bureau in the absence of a functional Bureau. The purpose of the presentation is to provide the Portfolio Committee with a detailed analysis and explanation of the original history and rationale underlying the establishment of the Waste Management Bureau. Okay, can you just next? In this regard, the presentation will focus on the following matters: the legislative context, the national waste statistics as it was presented at the time to the Portfolio Committee, the challenges in the waste sector, the legal nature of the Waste Management Bureau, the perceived conflict of interest in the dual roles of the Director General of the Department, and the 2017 amendments on the Waste Management Bureau, as well as the progress so far that we made on the Industry Waste Fire Management Plan. Now, Section 24 of the Constitution provides for an environmental right in the Bill of Rights that is not harmful to the health or well-being, and to have the environment protected for the benefit of the present and future generation through reasonable legislative and other measures. Against this backdrop, the National Environmental Management Waste Act 2008 was passed to reform the laws regulating the waste management in accordance with the new constitutional dispensation. In May 2012, the waste management strategy was also published, which is now under implementation. In summary, our waste management legal framework is influenced and informed and by and based on key components of the waste management hierarchy, which dictates the overall strategic approach for waste management based on principles of reduce, reuse, recycle, and recovery of waste. The National Waste Information Baseline Study commissioned in 2011 shows that South Africa generated approximately 108 million tons of waste, of which 98 million tons was disposed of at a landfill, 59 million tons was general waste, 48 million tons was unclassified waste, and the remaining 1 million tons was hazardous waste. Approximately 10% of all waste generated in South Africa was recycled in 2011 and 90% was disposed of at landfills. In comparison, a few countries from developing nations provide insight on what potential, economically and otherwise, there is no government implementing appropriate and large-scale waste stream waste management. Unfortunately, since the adoption of the waste hierarchy policy in 2009, and despite our best efforts, increasing quantities of waste, poor waste management, and lack of access to waste services have increasingly led to increased pollution with associated negative environmental impact and environmental degradation. The levels of recycling and reuse are very low, and waste is not necessarily seen or considered as a resource with socio-economic potential. In this regard, these challenges have to be addressed in order to unleash South Africa's waste sector economic potential and at the same time to attain the minimum environmental protection and benefits. The waste management sector has been identified as having an estimated potential turnover of approximately 50 billion per annum. To unlock the socio-economic potential in the waste sector, the Minister in 2013 tabled the National Environmental Management Waste Amendment Bill B32 of 2013, and I have attached that bill for the Committee for Information and Reference Purposes. The bill made provision for the establishment of a waste management agency, which was proposed to be a fully-fledged public entity. It had a similar structure than the one that is currently proposed in the National Environmental Management Laws Amendment Bill 2017. The proposed functions of the Waste Management Agency was to facilitate the development and coordination of the implementation of the industry waste management plans, to facilitate disbursements to the industry waste management plans, and while considering the bill, the Portfolio Committee at the time was mindful of the failures of Buyisa eBay and Rhodesia and concluded that there was a need to develop a new institutional model to regulate waste stream management. And this new institutional model had the following features, and that is the model that you currently see in the Act. An implementation agency had to be established, headed by a chief executive officer, no board of directors, and not a non-profit company, because previously all the other institutions were non-profit companies. The minister sets a policy framework within which it must operate, and operationally being accountable to the Director General while operating within the legal framework of the PFMA, with the Director General being the accounting officer, staff component, and specialists to be appointed by the Chief Executive Officer. The National Environmental Management Waste Amendment Act 2014 then established the Waste Management Bureau. The Bureau was established as a specialist implementing agent and as a juristic person without a board of directors, but separate from the department. The Bureau exists as a separate legal persona with a board of directors without the board of directors headed and acting through a chief executive officer of the Bureau, who is accountable to and reports to the Director General, and the Director General is the designated accounting authority of the Bureau for the purposes of the PFMA. The intention of Parliament was to create a specialist implementing entity with a legal persona without a board of directors, operationally independently from the department, but with strong oversight of the over the policy direction, operation and finances of the Bureau by both the Minister and the Director General within the PFM legal framework and with parliamentary oversight. The objectives of the Bureau are, amongst others, to promote and facilitate the minimization, reuse, recycling and recovery of waste, the management to manage the disbursement of funds deriving from the waste management levies for implementation of the industry waste management plan, to monitor the implementation of industry waste management plans, and to progressively build the capacity within the Bureau to provide specialist support for the development and implementation of municipal waste management plans and capacity building programs, and also to provide support and advice on the development of waste management plans, tools, instruments, processes, systems, and norms and standards. In terms of the Waste Tire Regulations 2017, whenever an industry waste tire management plan expires, is withdrawn or terminated, and no other industry waste tire management plan exists, the Bureau is responsible to facilitate, supervise, and control the management of waste tires. And currently, we are in that phase. That is what the Waste Management Bureau is currently doing with after the withdrawal of the RDISA industry waste management plan. Next. Thanks. At the last briefing of the Waste Management Matters, the Portfolio Committee raised the concern whether the Director General of the Department is conflicting, acting as a temporary Chief Executive Officer and the Accounting Authority of the Bureau. The Portfolio Committee's concern is addressing two parts, not three. Firstly, the roles which are the source of concern is the statutory duties imposed on the Director General by the Act of Parliament. Now, in other words, it is an Act of Parliament that places a legal obligation on her to act temporarily as CEO until a CEO is appointed. If she does not do that, then she will be in non-compliance with the Act of Parliament. In this instance, the section that provides her the power when the Bureau is not operation, when the CEO is not appointed or is absent, but not if there's an appointed CEO, when there's not a CEO a yet appointment, then the DG is the CEO. And she cannot delegate that function, and she cannot appoint the acting CEO under that circumstances. The provision in the Act that make provision for the appointment of the acting CEO is another provision in the Act. And I just need to find it very quickly. I will come back to it, but if the Chief Executive, that is Section 34K4, if the Chief Executive Officer is for any reason unable to perform any of his or her functions, the Director General of the Department must, in writing, appoint another person as Acting Chief Executive Officer until the Chief Executive Officer is able to resume those functions, but not for a period longer than 6 months, except under circumstances where the absence of the Chief Executive Officer is due to a disciplinary matter. So it's a different section that my provision that temporarily when there is a CEO is appointed, that another person can be appointed in an acting capacity from the one that before, which is a transitional provision, that before there is a CEO appointed, that the Director General then step in and be the CEO for the time being.
Come again on that.
Okay.
Can you
Section 34A3 provides for the circumstances under which the DG step in as the CEO. And Section 34A3 reads as follows. In the event of absence of a functional bureau or a chief executive officer, the powers and the duties of the bureau revert to the Director General of the department contemplated in Section 34G1, who in such a case must exercise those powers and perform those duties until the bureau is functional or the chief executive officer is appointed. Now, we are exactly in that phase. The bureau is established in terms of the Act. The bureau is established in terms of Section 34A1. It needed to brought into operation, so we are in the process of making it functional, and so it's established already, and we have to make it operational due to the withdrawal of the RDSA plan. And in that process,
before, so you are reading Section
34A3, and before the CEO is now appointed, then the Director General is the CEO for the time being until such time that the CEO is appointed. The provision for appointing an acting CEO is 34K4. That presumes that the CEO is already appointed but is temporarily unable to file because she's on leave or on sick or for whatever reason. In that circumstances, then the Director General can appoint an acting CEO. Okay, secondly, this is a temporary arrangement provided for by Parliament in the anticipation of the challenges which were going to arise with setting up the new bureau. And we have in the written portion that we provided to the Portfolio Committee, we have explained at length what those challenges were. Legal precedent indicates that a conflict of interest only arises in a given scenario if existing facts or circumstances show that the conflict of interest exists or that the person is in fact conflicted on the basis of existing facts in circumstances in which the person finds him or herself. In light of the National Environmental Laws Amendment Bill that is currently considered by Parliament, the Department is engaging with National Treasury to list the Waste Management Bureau in terms of the PFMA. Now, that hasn't been done yet. And the Minister did indicate that she is prepared, once the Bureau is listed in terms of the PFMA, to then appoint a Chief Executive Officer. The National Environmental Laws Amendment Bill, currently before Parliament, proposes changes to the current model of the Waste Management Bureau, that once the bill is passed by Parliament and signed into law and promulgated, the challenges experienced and the criticism against the current model would have been addressed. The Waste Management Bureau will then be able to function as a fully-fledged public entity with a board of directors. However, until such time that a bill is passed by Parliament, the Department has to implement the current model of the Waste Management Bureau. Next. Just to give an indication, I have indicated that because the RDSA plan was withdrawn and in order to avoid the vacuum, the transitional provisions in terms of the Waste Tire Regulation 2017 make provision that the Bureau take a step in and then make manage the waste tires in the interim. Now, the Minister of Environmental Affairs also published the call for industry waste tire management plans on 30 October 2017 with a closing date of 31 December 2017. And we have received 4 submissions for plans from Energy in for Evergreen Energy, JPC Energy Systems, Wamisa and Santruco. The process undertaken in handling the received submissions was as follows. A preliminary departmental evaluation was conducted and communicated to the plan proponents. The public consultation and hearings were conducted in 7 provinces. And there was also a public consultation through the government notice, and the government notice number 479 published in the Government Gazette on 7 May 2018. So in that notice, we invite comments from the general public, and we also indicate a public hearing date. Engagements with government departments entities were conducted on 6 and 7 June 2018, and written comments were received by the department up to the closing date of 7 June 2018. Plan proponents were given until 31 August 2018 to consider the comments received to amend the industry waste management plan and to submit them to the Minister for consideration in terms of the Act. And then the industry waste tire generators producers were requested to indicate to which of the proposed industry waste tire plans they subscribe to, if any. Because in terms of the notice, the call for plans, we said generators and producers of waste tires must indicate they must either subscribe to one of the plans submitted or they must submit their own plan. So we have then just followed it up and asked that industry then indicate that to which of the plans they subscribe.
Thank you, Linda. And Honourable Chair, let me then just refer the Honourable Members to, one, the attachment by the Minister's letter to operationalise the Waste Bureau, a letter that was addressed to the Minister of Finance, dated the 9th of June, and Treasury has interacted with the Department both on the business case for establishing the Waste Bureau. However, they then also indicated that they want to await the finalization of the current NEMLA amendment. The second part that I would like to refer the Honourable Members to is how then in the organisation the current arrangements on the Waste Bureau are implemented in respect of delegations, because the DG makes decisions at different points. So I've attached the financial and HR delegations, which is a document that looks like, which has got a page like this. And there, all the functions that are related to finance, they link to the CFO in the department. Others go to the COO. So the accountability system of the department is what is applicable currently within the Waste Bureau, because also administratively, I cannot transfer money to myself in terms of my accounting responsibility, so there is no bank account that is separate operational for the Waste Bureau. We use the Department of Environmental Affairs bank account. So from that point of view, again, both legally and administratively, we are then implementing the activities of the Waste Bureau within the parameters of the Treasury regulations and what is provided for in law. Then I thought I should also then allow the next presentation, Chair, to then talk through exactly what the progress is, and it will also link to the establishment, how many people now we have who are more doing the work of the Waste Bureau, and I will then come in later on. So I would like to hand over to Andy Lembenjera to then continue. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honourable Members.
Before, welcome.
Sorry?
There was a legal opinion that was presented in the last meeting. When was that? 17th of April. The idea was to have the same legal opinion presented. So I just want to find out if that has been circulated, because I've been going through my documents trying to get that.
The previous legal opinion was presented and also circulated, and this legal opinion doesn't really deviate from that. It just provides the committee with a bit more background as to what led to the provisions in the Act. We thought that the committee would benefit from that.
The idea was to have the same one presented, because if you remember, part of the reason why we had to reschedule it is because we thought that there was some contradiction between that opinion that was presented and what was currently happening. So I see that opinion is not here, it's a new one now.
The minister said to me, because I was not here, she had not signed off on a legal opinion. Because she wanted to know what exactly, how the legal opinion was asked. So basically, I think we understood that there was more a question about the role of the DG and how the legal arrangements are, and which is what is unpacked currently in the submission that the explanatory submission that has been presented. So I don't know if maybe then the committee can then enable that to go back to that so that you can, because it was, we did not know that we needed to circulate the same legal opinion. What they have done.
So the one that was presented was not signed off?
No, because I understood this was a matter arising, and then there was a draft opinion, and it was internal. Just explain that, Linda. So the minister said in the meeting when we appeared, if you recall, Chair, the committee, the last time, that in the first place he did not understand that he needed to provide a legal opinion because all documents must go through her. So this is what she has signed off for us to present now.
That is true. That is what happened, is that it was submitted, but the minister at the time didn't have sight of that opinion. But it's not really very much different. If once the other presentations is done, we can maybe reflect. I can take you quickly through that if you want to.
Okay. So what is the position? The opinion was not signed off, or there is no difference between what that opinion and this one? What is the actual position of the department? Because if you say to us that it was not signed off, it means that we must not use that for our purpose. But if you say that there is no difference, then it means that we can then look at that and look at what is currently given to us.
I have no powers over the committee. The committee can tell us what it wishes to do. We were just reporting what our principal told us on the matter. So it is not different from what I hear from legal, but I'm not a lawyer.
Okay. We'll ask that there will also be taken through that. Okay.
Okay, thanks, Chair, and thanks to the members for the opportunity. Basically, as the DG has said, mentioned, we'll just talk about the establishment of the Bureau from the organization's perspective. In terms of the outline for the presentation, the first couple of slides were supposed to be dealing with the functions of the Bureau in terms of the Waste Amendment Act, as well as the current activities from a regulation point of view as a result of the waste regulations. But I see that Linda has touched on that. So I think, I mean, there's no reason, I mean, to go through that again. And then we talk about human resources, in terms of the development of human resources from the beginning. When we started the waste high operations in October until now, we'll also talk about first quarter performance from April to June.
Just
2018.
Get into the actual presentation.
Okay.
Leave the outline.
Okay, as I mentioned, those couple of slides about the are about the regulation, regulations from the legal point of view in terms of the Bureau. So I'm going to just skip all of those. And then from a HR point of view, the Bureau started with four staff members in October. And the slides basically provides information in terms of the number of staff that were added over time. And as of the end of April 2018, we had about 34 people. And then the portion on the right basically talks about the functions in terms of the departments and sections within the department. For instance, the logistics specialists, macro collectors and macro depot specialists, depot operations, regional coordinators, call center management, and so on and so on. So it just provides information in terms of the structure within the Bureau. And then the next slide is about the performance of the Bureau in quarter one. In terms of the APP for the Bureau. So that first indicator basically talks about the diversion of waste tires from landfills. And then in terms of quarter one, we were supposed to achieve a target of 8% as percent waste tires are rising, which was a target of 13,621 tons of tires that were supposed to be processed, and we achieved 11,765, which is equivalent to 6.9% of waste tires arising. So we slightly underachieved as far as that is concerned. And then towards the end, I'm going to provide more details in terms of the background and information regarding the, those achievements. The next one is about waste tires that were collected from collection points. The target was 9% of waste tires arising, or 15,324 tons. And we actually collected 27,608 tons, which is equivalent to 16.8% of waste tires arising. The next indicator is about the number of macro collectors and waste pickers benefiting in recycling programs that are managed by the Waste Bureau. The target for the year is 250 macro collectors registered, and we've got about 247 that are registered in terms of quarter one performance. And then we also had a target of 150 waste pickers that are equipped with tools of trade. The target for quarter one was procurement and distribution of the tools of trade to the 150 waste pickers, and the achievement was that procurement had been conducted and the tools of trade were delivered to the department, but they had not been distributed. And we are actually planning to launch the project before the end of October. So we do have the tools of trade, and currently we're dealing with final acceptance testing, after which then we will be launching the project. The next indicator deals with the number of jobs created within the waste tire sectors. We've got a target of 1,000 jobs created, and Q1 achievement was 652 jobs. The next one is the number of SMMEs that are contracted. We've got a target for SMMEs contracted of 207, and the achievement as of quarter one was 166, and the slide does provide a breakdown in terms of the different categories. And then this slide basically talks about the current status in terms of the approvals that we received from Treasury to be able to contract with contractors that were previously contracted to Redisa. So we need to go over the waste operations in October. Treasury provided us with a one-year approval for a closed tender so that we don't have to go on an open tender to be able to continue with the operations due to the urgency of the situation. So those contracts will be expiring at the end of September, so we need to make sure then that to ensure the continuity of operations after September from the beginning of October to be able then to go out on a tender. So these current contracts are expiring. That's what that...
Okay, what contracts are this? Sorry.
The contracts basically are for services, service providers with regards to the current waste operations. So we are currently contracted, for instance, with depot operators for operations of depots, land owners for the provision of land in which the operations are taking place. We've got transporters, being primary transporters and secondary transporters. We've got processors, the companies that are actually processing and recycling the waste tires. So we've got all those services, and we've got contracts with them currently, and those contracts will be expiring at the end of September.
Okay, can I just explain again?
Just to share, in the document, we have attached all the contractors. There's a list is attached on transporters. What Treasury gave us the approval for, remember that we were not going, we didn't have a mechanism to take over contracts from REDISA to an entity of the state. And basically that's the approval that Treasury gave us, is to then contract with those existing operators, which were the operators that were working under REDISA. So that is what that approval is for. So we did not have to get new people. We had to continue with the people that were providing transport, processing, and so on, which were contracted under REDISA, but without using a government tender process. That's what that approval is for. And that list is then attached of who are those service providers.
So that's... contractors which were procured under REDISA, so you are just taking them over. Okay. So it's not like appointing new contractors and so forth.
What Treasury, in fact, the letter, I thought it was attached, the letter of approval from Treasury. What Treasury gave us approval for, they said, one, in terms of the Treasury regulations, we have to open the process. However, they understand the challenge because they are part of, they've been part of the process. And in the 12 months, we must then open the process so that there is competition, which is why then there were also tenders at the same time that were put out. In order to, one, there are people that were already contracted with REDISA, which were providing services. There are other people or contractors or service providers that had agreements with REDISA, but there was no activities yet that were undertaken. And those category of processors, for example, could not then come on stream with the Waste Bureau before we open it to a tender. So that is the kind of approval that we have from the National Treasury, which is why in the presentation we then explain these are the tenders then we had to open up, and the process is still underway on the others. Thanks.
So, okay, because you see what confuses me is that there is a approval for deviation. I see the letter here from Soli Chitangan. For deviation, but I'm also aware that there is now a new process of contracting for 3 years now. And what confuses me is what then is the relationship between that process and the plan. Maybe as you move along, if you can just clarify that as well.
Okay, sir. And then as a result of the current contracts, I mean, that we've got, as I mentioned, they're going to be expiring at the end of September. to be able to continue post-September, then there's a need. And also, as the teachers mentioned, in terms of the approval from Treasury, in terms of going on an open tender. We're currently embarking then on an open tender process, and the categories basically for those tenders are mentioned there, micro collectors, micro depot operators, as well as depot operators, storage land, processing, as well as transportation. So currently, we're estimating that, we're targeting that we will be completing those tenders during August and September so that they become effective from 1st of October. And also, we will see that they also include processing tender. Processing being one of the biggest challenges that we have currently in terms of retail operations, obviously is receiving quite a lot of focus and attention. In terms of that process, we are at due diligence stage in terms of the tender evaluation process. And it's also a high priority, in terms of making sure then that we are effectively able to deal with waste tire recycling and not pile up tires and fill depots as a result of collecting tires and not being able to process them. And then the Treasury approval was limited to active operators. So whoever at the time was active under the DSA regime, Treasury approved that we contract with them. But obviously that has limited our capacity to be able to expand the processing capacity as a result of that. So with the new tender, basically, this will include the existing capacity that we inherited from Redisa, as well as being able to expand it to also include new and prospective processors.
Okay, can I just, before you proceed, I think, Chair, the reason then is to, the Minister approved that, firstly, in terms of procurement processes in Treasury, you have to indicate through a procurement plan as early as April whether you are going to outsource certain functions, and that is published in the tender, in the website of the National Treasury. It is meant to curtail all the unplanned outsourcing in government, and therefore Treasury, in their approval, we needed to also give effect to a process of opening up the tender. The Minister then said he agrees, subject to, if the plans that are now underway, if those are concluded, if they were concluded, for example, for argument's sake in June, we would not have had to then conclude this process. If they are concluded in November, unfortunately, we have to have a legal regime that allows us to proceed from a procurement point of view, which is the only way is then through the open tender system in government. So in the process of the public consultation, plan proponents were informed that this is the current arrangement, and therefore, in any event, because there were already operations of Redisa, they would have had to take over what was existing. So there would then be an arrangement where they look and do due diligence and take over some of the contracts if, as and when the minister gives approval in respect of the plan. So that is the current arrangement, and would have to work out all those legalities once the process of the plans is concluded. So this process is meant to, one, Treasury was saying they will not give us another extension, so we will be in breach of the Treasury regulations if we extend any of these existing contracts without opening the process to a tender. So that is why then the tender processes are underway. But there will be a condition even in those contracts. If the minister is not yet concluded, which effectively from the 1st of October, if the process is not concluded, then we will then know. Amak, your time frame on the waste plans. You can just quickly talk to that because that's how the processes are linked.
Okay.
Thanks, DG. Yeah, I think there was a slide that Linda referred to in terms of how we are adjudicating on these plans. And currently, we have referred, Minister has actually referred some of the comments we got through the public process back to the plan proponents. They have until the end of August this year to resubmit the plans. Pending that, the Minister will review those plans again in terms of what she requested in the letter that she sent to them. So it'll take us well into September and October, depending on how fast Minister can adjudicate on those. And then we will have to take Minister's instructions thereafter in terms of how we proceed.
So what is the expected date of finalizing the plans?
Chair, in terms of how we're going to be directed by the Minister, it's going to take another few months. I'm not sure. You know what the new submissions are going to be like. I mean, we're not aware of, you know, the content there too.
No, but people have submitted the plans. They've said this is what we are going to do. There was comments, and those comments closed, and now you are looking at the comments. So it's just for them to revise. They've got until the end of August, and then what will take a long period for department to finalize.
So we don't think
because
it's going to
currently
be
what is coming up is that you are running two processes. You've got these plans that you want to approve, but then also on the other hand you are advertising for the services through this contract, micro collectors, the depots. Isn't it this what is going to be done by the plans? I mean, in the plans they will detail this is our plan to collect, to store, to process, to do all of these things. So you're almost like putting the cart before the horse by appointing these services before the plan is finalized. Shouldn't you prioritize the plan first before appointing this?
Maybe just to, Mark, you must answer correctly. The legal process, Chair, after receiving the comments, once they resubmit, assume that they submit on the 30th of August. If they had submitted now, possibly, the Minister would publish. So the Minister is expected to publish again for 30 days, get comments. The industry must confirm also, because part of the challenge that was a dilemma for the Minister is that on all of the four plans, the industry said they have not they are not part of those plans. So the plans in terms of Section 28 are supposed to be prepared by generators of waste. So until there is evidence that the industry also is party to those plans, it is going to be somewhat difficult for Minister, and she has to look at other provisions within the Act to then confirm how she proceeds. So technically, these processes have to run in parallel because of that. So 30 days of publishing could, assuming it could take, if it's published from the 1st of September, end of September, then you still have time to do the evaluation and then confirm. I'm not sure how the industry has responded to the Minister currently in those letters. Huh? Do you know? No,
okay,
you're
maybe
not.
Let's take all the presentation. I was just asking these questions to help us as you go along to touch on that. But please finalize, and then we'll say I'm being unfair to members. I'm sure they also want to ask questions. But I also want to understand certain things. Okay, if you can conclude.
Okay, Chair. The next couple of slides, basically they deal with, provide detailed information in terms of operational performance during the first quarter. So I've just mentioned earlier on, basically in terms of performance for collecting, which was 27,608 against the target of 15. And in terms of waste tires arising, it was 16.2% compared to a target of 9%. And then the next slide basically deals with waste tires that were delivered for recycling purposes. We delivered about 11.6 11,600 tons of waste tires, and most of those basically were truck and passenger tires, as well as a bit of OTR shred. This slide basically is a comparison of collections compared to deliveries. So you will see basically that out of 27,000 that was collected, we only delivered 11,000, meaning then that 15,000 or just under 16,000 of tons of tires that were collected basically had to be stored. So that again highlights the importance of processing and the fact that as long as we've got less capacity for processing, we'll keep on having to add more depots and storage capacity. And then the next slide is just more information again in terms of processing. Just under 12,000 processed compared to over 13,600, which was the target for the quota. And then in terms of categorization, about half of that, let's say about 5,400 tons, went to cement kilns as well as brickworks for fuel energy. 5,700 tons went to crumbling operations. And then we also had a bit of pyrolysis. Pyrolysis has come down quite significantly compared to previous periods, and I'm going to talk about that later on. And then the right part of the slide basically is categorization in terms of the waste hierarchy. So most of it was recovery, energy recovery, as well as recycling. And then this is basically in terms of waste tires arising. In terms of waste tires arising, processing or recycling was 6.9% compared to 8%, which was the target. And then we also provide annualized figures. So on an annualized basis, it's equivalent to 27.6%. And we also compared to the previous period, which was the 6 months from October to March last year, which was 21%. So what that means basically is that even though we did not achieve the target, but there's an improvement or progression compared to the 6 months from October to March. And then in terms of summary, collections targets were exceeded. Recycling targets were not exceeded. And the shortfall mainly was due to reduced waste tire processing by pyrolysis plant. And that was due to low demand for their products, especially within the mining sector. And also we had one pyrolysis plant that was relocating. So we're expecting that plant to be starting again up around August and September. And also there was a challenge with regard to the Bloemfontein eviction, which diverted some of the attention away from the focus areas. As a result of that, we had to relocate the Bloemfontein site to a new site because the landlord basically had evicted us. The landlord did not want to contract with us when we started operations in October. And the reason for that was that they were planning to do a development on their site. So as a result of that process, basically they submitted an eviction application, and as a result of that, then we had to relocate that site. And then we also had to cross that downtime for some of the kilns, cement kilns, and also there were some plant changes. So all of that basically affected the performance as far as capacity for processing was concerned. But obviously, as I mentioned earlier on, I mean, the current tender is focusing on processing as well, so as a result of that, there will be additional capacity that is created for processing. And that last bullet point basically highlights the fact that there was improvement in both collections and processing when compared to the previous financial year from October to March 2018. Yeah. And then this is just a picture highlighting the improvements that are happening. Basically, we procured balers. And balers basically help to compact the tires and result in space saving, and also it improves the housekeeping. So it's just for information for the members to see basically what happens as a result of those balers. We've delivered some of those pillars, half of them, and there's another half that is still coming, and that will also assist in terms of space saving at the depots currently as a result of the huge collections and low processing capacity. The depots are over full, but with bailing as well as processing capacity that I mentioned earlier, that will assist to deal with that situation here. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I think in conclusion, we probably wanted to provide the committee with all the information about what is happening currently, especially to also bring to your attention a possible dilemma if the plans, depending on when the plans are approved, that the Waste Bureau would probably have to continue with the operations until those plans are approved. And secondly, the major dilemma being the processing capacity, because the intention is not to just remove tires from the dealers and not get them processed. So in the main, currently now, there is no way that the Waste Bureau can increase the processing capacity unless it is able to bring in new processing capacity on stream. And lastly, also the issues around the role of the DG can only be resolved if Parliament is able to conclude the legislation, the amendment of NEMLA, and the Minister has told me in no uncertain terms that she's not willing to appoint a CEO of an entity that is not yet listed. So those are the facts that I thought you needed to be familiar with, Chair. And then, and if it's possible, then for honourable members to just note the structure of the Waste Bureau. Again, this is the structure that was presented to Treasury. And then the pay scales is attached. They are different from the department's pay scales as approved by the minister. Like all the DIA entities, we have got pay scales for each entity which are not the similar for the department. And lastly, Honorable Chair, if you still wish to discuss, I have the copy. I understand the members have been given the copy of what you had received as a committee on the 23rd of March as the legal opinion, and I would ask Linda to quickly take you through it to just reflect that there is no fundamental differences with what is in the explanatory memo. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, and honourable members. I've quickly browsed through the legal opinion, and I understand why the minister maybe have some discomfort, because what this legal opinion actually did is to point out the difficulties with the provisions in terms of the current Act as experienced and the different legal interpretations that are possible, and which is different from the position of the department, but also with our interaction with National Treasury, they also have some differences. And I will point that out to the and argue that for you in terms of the legal opinion. And the differences under the legal brief, paragraph 1, 2, 3 is more or less the same. And 4, the establishment of the Waste Management Bureau on the page 2, it's just set out that the same that we have set out, that the Bureau is headed, but where the challenges begin, and that is what I wanted to point out. So maybe we should start with the establishment of the Waste Bureau, because the first portions were really very much of the same. But I need to point out some, a little bit of the background and then come into the argument. Section 34A provides for the establishment of the implementation bureau to be known as the Waste Management Bureau within the department as a juristic person. Now, the within the department is creating challenges for specifically National Treasury, and together with the other provisions which says that the DG will be the accounting authority. And that, in terms of the PFMA, that is perfectly possible. And I will point out the provision to you that the DG, that the accounting authority for the entity is either the board, if there's a board, or the CEO, or where an act of parliament determined otherwise, that person. So it's perfectly possible that the DG could be the accounting officer, but this words within the department is what is creating the interpretation challenges, because it says it's within the department, but on the other hand, it's a juristic person. And if you look at the structure of the Act clearly has a separate, not just another branch of the department. The Act clearly has the intention that it's a separate entity, but with strong oversight of the Director General and as well as the Minister in terms of the supervisory powers. If you look at, for example, Section 34B, the Minister can make, the Minister must determine the policy. In terms of the minister supervisor, she can issue service level standards and norms, and she can also issue directives. If you look at the regulatory powers further in the Act, the minister has regulatory powers in terms of the Waste Management Bureau. If you look at all the provisions in the Act as a whole, then it's very clear that the legislative intent intended to have a separate entity, but the words within the department is creating a challenge, and that is one of the reasons why National Treasury haven't listed the Bureau as the entity as yet. But we are in ongoing discussions with them to convince them to look at the Act a little bit differently. Then, in terms, and at the time, what we haven't explained in the document currently, when we tabled the bill originally, we based it on our normal entity models, like, for example, SANB and SANParks and so forth, our normal entity models. So the committee did look at that, but the committee favored not the board. They, for the reasons explained in the document that we have submitted to you, the committee at its time didn't favor a board. So then we looked at the SASSA model, but what is currently in the Act is also not completely the SASSA model anymore, because it made further changes. The committee at the time made further changes to that model. Then in relation to the policy and the minister's supervisory powers, that was the same, the functions of the Bureau, the funding and financial management.
Just before you go to, so because the opinion here was saying the Bureau is almost the same model as SASSA. So you are saying no, it's not.
It has similarities. But it has similarities, but it's also different because of the text that was changed in the portfolio committee. When the committee said, okay, go and look for a model that doesn't have a board, we went and looked at a SASSA model and presented that sort of provision. But then the committee at the time changed it, and so it's not completely the same. So it's different from the SASSA model as well.
Yeah, okay. But just to know that this opinion was saying is the same model. I can read you the part which says, the second paragraph, it says, this model was based on the South African Social Security Agency, established in terms of the Act number 9 of 2004.
It's correct, but it's based on that, not completely the same. It's based on that. It follow, for example, the in terms of the personnel, the SASSA model also referred to the Public Service Act, and it has similar provisions, but it's not completely the same because of the changes that were made at a time in the portfolio. But it was based on the SASSA model at a time. Yeah. Structurally,
so
yeah,
this
but
sentence
is not
a true reflection.
I think what we mean is that we use that as the basis for the draft that was currently. It was based on that model, but changed obviously by the committee.
Yeah, but
at
this was
yeah.
This opinion was drafted on the 23rd of March.
Yes.
and that was well after the amendment bill was passed.
But Chair, the committee wanted the amendment, the opinion. It was never offered by the department. That's where the minister is uncomfortable. It was
but
never
it's from the department, isn't it?
No, well, it's written because people were trying to recollect. Now we've gone to records because the changes happened in Parliament. The law that's being implemented is the law that was passed by Parliament. So we've gone, the explanatory memo now has gone back to all the records. That's what, that I can stand for also, and even minister. And she said, in fact, the reason why she's not even willing to engage on this matter, she told me that when committees make changes that are fundamental, these are the implications that happen. So she's, yeah, so I that's why I'm saying, she said she's not tabling this. So even if we are discussing it, she's not tabled this. It's tabled by us.
But it's from the department, this opinion.
Yes, but yes, what is being written there, Chair, is that what the committee desired at the time was to use the SASSA model. Treasury is saying in the first instance when they list entities, they don't take another person's legislation. It's fit for the purpose of that institution and of the function. So they are not even compatible with this comparison.
Okay. What is the status of this opinion? It has got no standing.
No standing.
But this came from the department, as you can see. It was tabled to us on the 20th. When was it? In March. Yes. And it was part of the package that was coming from the department as a result of our request.
Well, Chair,
now,
the minister,
let me just finish it.
The minister is saying this is not her document.
DG, let me just make my point. This opinion came from the department as a result of our request. It was part of the documentation that was circulated to us from the department. It was presented here by an official from the department. We, as a result of this thing, picked up that there might be some issues. Now, earlier on, I asked about this opinion, and I forgot the name of
Linda.
Linda said, there is no contradiction, it's the same thing. That's why she can present it. Now we are disowning this report because what is being said here, now apparently you differ with it. Because at the time of the production of this opinion, the Act was long past, this Amendment Act to the Waste that made provision for the establishment of the Waste Bureau. So it's not that it was drafted at the time when this matter was before the committee or just after the committee. It's long after. So I can understand where you are to say the department wished for this kind of a model, but it was changed by the committee, and this is what we have, and that was supposed to be reflected in the opinion. So we're given an opinion which was wrong, in as far as the model is concerned.
I think Linda read that section. It says it's based on the
on
model.
That.
It does
but
not say it's the same model.
Chair, we didn't. We just didn't go into the differences because it would have done it, made it very long. One of the differences, for example, between the SASSA model and the department or the Waste Bureau is, for example, the role of the Director General. In the SASSA model, the Director General didn't have such a prominent role. So there are differences, but that is where it starts off. That is what we try to say with that sentence.
Okay, proceed, even if the document.
Chair, can I come in now? I was there at the time as well. And I think the...
No, let's get an opinion. We'll come back. Let's finalize this.
It's just the principle structure, the model itself, Chair, is based on the SASSA model. What was the main issue at the time with the previous chairperson of the Portfolio Committee? Is this aspect of having a board and not having a board. That's where the SASA model comes in. So the principal structure is based on the SASA model, which does not have a board. That was the real point of this issue at the time, board or not a board. So I think that's where we use the SASA model, because SASA does not have a board. And that is the principal matter. The rest of the operations and other things, you know, could be slight differences. But the issue I think that we're really dealing with is a principal structure, board or not a board, which is what the chair wanted at the time. And now we're in the amendment, Lemna 4, which is saying, well, you know, let's institute a change to that.
Okay, Linda, proceed with the... you can hear that you don't really say the same things, but proceed.
The functions of the Bureau are the same as what is in the Act. That is not different. The funding and the financial management. Says that the Director General of the Department is designated as the accounting authority of the Bureau. That is a fact, and that is also in the other document. And it also, the functions of the Chief Director and the fact that the Chief of the Chief Executive Officer and the fact that the Chief Executive Officer must comply with all the relevant provisions of the applicable public service policy, regulations, legislation. However, the Chief Executive Officer, but we have pointed out in the other opinion where there are differences in the paying model of the officials. To basically attract the necessary expertise, there can be different salary scales that is made provision for in the Act. But also the Chief Executive is accountable to the Director General and must report to him and her on activities of the Bureau. That is in the Act. It is stated like that. And that is also one of the challenges that National Treasury have. This close relationship between the CEO and the department. That is why we pointed it out. And then in terms of Section 34L, the Chief Executive Officer is responsible for the appointment of the employees. The Public Finance Management Act, we have just indicated here and also in the other, the listing, the issue of the listing of the entities. In terms of Section 49(2) and states, and that we have also in our written document that we have provided, Section 49(2) states that if a public entity, that is now page 4, the third paragraph from the top, Section 49(1) requires every public entity to have an authority which must be accountable for the purpose of this Act. Section 49(2) states that if the public entity has a board or another controlling board, that board or controlling body is the accounting authority for that entity, or if the public entity does not have a controlling board, the Chief Executive Officer or other person in charge of the public entity is the accounting authority for that public entity, unless specific legislation applicable to that public entity designates another person as the accounting authority. And that is what happened here. The Waste Act designates the Director General as the accounting officer. And that is what we also set out. In terms of the legal analysis, and there is where you may have problems, but not necessarily with the conclusion, because the Bureau was established in terms of the National Environmental Wage Amendment Act, that is so, and in terms of 34A1, provides the establishment of the Bureau as the implementing Bureau within the Department, and that is unfortunate words in the Act that we cannot get away from, and that is causing interpreting difficulties. But we said as a Department, you have to look at the whole structure of the Act. You can't just look at a few words when you decide what a model is. The approach was based on the SASA model. We see that again. It must also be noted that a SASA is listed in Schedule 3 of the PFMA as a national public entity, as well as other departmental entities such as South African National Biodiversity Institute and the South African National Park. So we are busy currently to get the Bureau listed under the PFMA. Section 34G1 of the National Waste Act, as amended, designated the Director General of the Department as the accounting authority of the Bureau, and Section 34K2 of NEMWA provides for the Chief Executive Officer of the Bureau to be accountable to the Director General of the Department. It's noteworthy that the Chief Executive Officer of the Bureau exercised the powers of the Bureau subject to the direction and approval of the Director General as designated accounting authority. I think this might go a bit too far. Let me just look at Section 34K. Okay, and the reason why this was set is in terms of Section 34K2, the Chief Executive Officer is accountable to the Director General of the Department and must report to him on or her on the activities of the Bureau. So it's a reporting requirement. Okay, then in our view, the legislature's intention was to establish an implementing bureau in the department without a board. The bureau must be headed by a chief executive officer accountable and reporting to the director general of the department. The legislature intended for the director general of the department to be the accounting authority in terms of the PFMA. The act makes provision for that. Section 34A2 of NEMWA, as amendment, states that the Bureau must comply with the provisions of the PFMA. That is so, Section 34A2. Section say exactly that the Bureau must comply with the provisions of the Public Finance Management Act. But once an entity is listed, what is said here, it looks like the it appears that the legislature further intended for the financial management reporting and auditing requirements of the PFM to be applicable to the board, despite not being listed as a public entity under the PFMA. Now, another interpretation, and that is the challenge with this act, that is the one interpretation, but the moment when an entity is listed in terms of the PFMA, there are provisions under the Treasury regulations and also under the PFMA that is applicable to public entities, but they are a bit different from that of the department. So there is a difference on how the PFMA deals with entities specifically as opposed to departments. In addition, the Bureau was established within the department. Now, that is the whole complicating factor. Also for Treasury. However, the reference to a juristic person in Section 34A1 presents a legal challenge regarding to the actual legal nature of the Bureau. So that is why we have to amend it, and that is why the NEMLA Bill is currently before the committee, because we are facing with these challenges. A consideration of the features of the juristic person presupposes an independent legal personality. Such a level of independence requires the jurist to have a board of directors to perform all of its functions. But that is not true, because we have the SASA model, which doesn't have a board. The fact that the Bureau is juristic, but in most instances they are board, like most companies, all entities almost have a board. So normally it's the case. The fact that the Bureau is a juristic person that does not act through a board of directors, but accounts to the director general of the department, clearly requires revision of the empowering statutes, as such an arrangement may be contrary to the legal requirement that is applicable to a juristic person. Furthermore, all the other similar departmental entities have boards of directors and are listed as a national as national public entities in Part A of the Schedule 3 of the PFMA. Notwithstanding the legal challenge regarding the legal nature of the board, the NEMWA as amended established the Bureau within the Department as a juristic person, reporting and accountable to the Director General of the Department. However, the Bureau does not currently have a Chief Executive Officer, and Section 34A3 of the NEMWA as amended provides for the powers and duties of the Bureau to be performed by the Director General of the Department until a Chief Executive Officer is appointed. The Director General of the Department is performing the powers and duties of the Bureau while the recruitment process of appointing a Chief Executive Officer are being finalized. The Director General of the Department has been performing these powers and duties since the establishment of the Bureau. It is 2 June 2014. The conclusion, the intention of the legislature is to create a public entity or a juristic person independent from the department with strong oversight over the operations and finances of the entity by both the minister and the director general. However, the word established within the department, the strong role of the director, that the director general, and the fact that the Public Service Act and regulations apply to the personnel of the Bureau, except for the scale of remuneration of the employees with specialist expertise, may provide the opportunity for different interpretations. This is the reason why the provisions pertaining to the Bureau are amended in the current National Environmental Laws Amendment Bill, B14-2017, currently before Parliament.
Okay. Just before we go to the members, just some few questions from my side. What is the position now? Does the Bureau exist? Has it been established? Or has it not been established? That's my first question. The second question is, what has happened to the acting CEO that was appointed by and introduced to this committee by the Director General? Yes, by yourself, DG, at the colloquium was it on waste? Yes. Yeah. Remember, we asked that we should get a briefing on the Waste Bureau. That briefing was presented by the acting chief executive then of the Waste Bureau as introduced by the DG. What has happened to that appointment? And then I'll hand over to the colleagues after that question.
You want to first answer on the leaders?
Chairperson, honorable members, the Act is very clear. When the Act came in operation, an implementing bureau dealing with the Waste Management Act, to be known as the Waste Management Bureau, is hereby established within the department as a juristic person. The bureau was established. It's just in the process of being operationalized, and that is the process in which the department is currently.
So my question is that, is it operational? Do we have something called Waste Management Bureau in the department?
Yes, we do, Chair.
Okay.
And you can see on the correspondence that went to Treasury, it talks about operationalizing the Waste Bureau under emergency measures. And secondly, I think the other question, Chair, I'd like to...
So it's operational, as we speak.
It's operational, but it's not a lead. It's operating within the department according to the legal arrangements that are existing within the department.
Okay.
But it won't have separate financials because those are the arrangements that we currently have with the treasurer. So we are accounting for it within the budget of the department. Then the part of the CEO, I never introduced an acting CEO, Chair. I introduced a specialist advisor to this committee. And I even explained that the person is seconded at the time to the department. So even in the documentation that appoints Nolwazi Tejana, she is a special advisor. So we don't have an acting CEO. The minister has never appointed an acting CEO. That is for the record, thank you, Chair.
Okay, let's get members. I think we might have to get back to the record then. Because I remember very vividly that Madam Nolwazi was introduced as the acting CEO of the Waste Bureau. And she presented on behalf of the Waste Bureau in that meeting. So we'll have to go back to the records because that has been the impression based on what has been submitted. I was taken aback when the minister said there was never a CEO, when all along we were under the impression that we've got a CEO. But we will come to that issue and the proper reading and interpretation of the Act when the board is operational, what does the Act say? But let's get to the members to ask the questions. Honorable Khadebe, Honorable Makubele, did you raise your hand, Honorable Stinka? Was your hand up? Okay. Honorable Stinka. I was going to be surprised if you're not going to raise. Yeah, you can keep quiet on. And then Perrin will be the last.
Thank you, Chair. I'll just pose one question, Chair. On the in October 2017, there were four employees, according to the information that was given to us. Can I have the names, if possible, and the position of these individuals that were occupying this position in the bureau? That will be all for me.
Okay. Honorable Makwea.
Chair, thanks and good morning to all present. I'm not used to be the second in asking questions.
Oh, you want to be the last?
we broke breaking protocol. But let me go for it for a change. We must just not get used to it. Anyway, it was read section 34A3 was read, but on the document that I've got, I don't have that provided on the one that has been added, the additional info documentation that is attached. 34A3. Yeah, I don't necessarily have it. I was just listening, but I would have wanted to read it also. the issues I'll go for. Firstly, let me go to the two.
Let me read it for you, so that you can be assisted. 34A3 says that in the event of absence of a functional bureau or a chief executive officer, the powers and duties of the Bureau revert to the Director General of the Department, contemplated in Section 34G1, who in such a case must exercise those powers and perform those duties until the Bureau is functional or a chief executive officer is appointed.
Okay. Chair, Firstly, let me go for the two official responses or presentations that were made. There's one that we got today, there's one that was given earlier, and the two seems to be or seem to be contradictory. And we are told, I'm talking to the two documents that we have got, that we are told the other has been withdrawn, in that the minister did not sign off. Perhaps what, and there's no point in utilizing one that has been withdrawn. But my real issue, Chair, is that it would have been good if the minister communicated with the portfolio committee on the withdrawal of the other one, because here the initial one was brought by officials and the second one is being brought again by officials. The minister is not here and we are engaging the same people. So it becomes very difficult to know exactly which one has a standing. All I'm saying is that it would have been good if the minister had withdrawn the initial document and then forwarded the new one so that we are clear on which one we should base our interaction with the department on. So now, if we were to take their word and believe that the minister has withdrawn the other one, it means there's no need in entertaining it. Yeah, but I'm just saying, DG, that there's no clarity from the minister to us, at least officially or formally, so that we don't necessarily have to rely on your word on which one is to be based, or we have to choose for ourselves the one that the minister may still be having difficulties with. That's the first point. The other issue that I've got and may need to be clarified here, I get a sense that because there's this difficulty about establishing the bureau within the department, whereas it is said to be a juristic person, as an issue, so that amendment needs to happen, then it will be listed, then it can start to operate normally, meaning that until it's listed, the bureau can be established as envisaged. And it leads me to the third aspect, Chair. My understanding of establishing the bureau was going to mean establishing the bureau based on its organogram, as is, in terms of the Act. Now, if it's not listed and many things can be done, it means it's difficult to talk about the bureau being operational in the sense that it's envisaged or provided for in the Act. I just don't want us to be contradicting ourselves, Chair. I want that to be established clearly here so that we know what we are dealing with. Otherwise, if our interpretation will be based on the bureau as in the Act and is not listed and therefore may not operate as such, what are we talking about? Are we ourselves pursuing something that does not exist fully functional or fully fleshed as it's expected to be? And therefore the establishment will really happen after the listing. Because the internal arrangements in terms of ensuring that the gap that was, or the vacuum that came as a result of de-establishing REDISA, yes, may need to be fulfilled by the department without necessarily referring to the establishment of the bureau as such. because those are internal mechanisms. So once we start talking, the other officials within the organogram and go to the extent of saying these are the persons holding these positions in terms of the organogram, then there's no point in saying you can't appoint the CEO. You know, you can only do that if it's listed, but the others you can appoint. I'm just saying that contradiction for me becomes serious. So we must be clear whether there is a bureau or there's no bureau. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Okubela. Honorable Steenkamp.
Thank you, Chair. Okay, the first presentation, I've got two questions, specifically related to slide 11, the perceived conflict of interest. I'd like to know if we could be provided some more detail as to what has been done to prep for the appointment of the CEO, awaiting the decision by Parliament. And then also, let's say it goes to Parliament next week, or let's say next week. How long approximately does the process take, or are you estimating the process will take? Because I know there's variance. To then appoint or advertise or whatever the process is. Okay, then on the briefing on the establishment of the Waste Bureau. Okay, the slide doesn't have a number, but on the slide it says the percentage of waste tires diverted from landfill sites. Your quarterly target for quarter one was 8% or 13,621, whereas only 6.5 or 11,145 tons were processed. That's all good and well, but it says here that there was low processing capacity, and that processing capacity are unevenly distributed throughout the country. So my question on that would be, how will this be dealt with in future? Because you also specifically spoke about what you've inherited from Rhodesia, kind of, if I can put it that way. I'd like to know, how are you going to catch up on this target, taking into consideration or into account that you have to catch up as to the backlog that you already have? And then also, how are you going to deal with the fact that you say the capacity is uneven throughout the country? So in other words, how are you going to make sure that it's evenly distributed? Also, I'd like to know if the Waste Bureau has bought any processing equipment since the establishment in October last year. Okay, the next one I have is that there was, on the jobs created within the tire sector, I'd like to know the 147 jobs at the depots, or in the depots, it says, yeah, at how many depots were, at how many of your depots was the jobs created, as well as which depots? Okay, then, okay, I already asked that one. Okay, then I've got a concern that, so you kept saying that the Waste Bureau is doing better than Rhodesia. My concern is that within the first presentations that we had way back when, that the department as well as the Waste Bureau kept saying that Rhodesia didn't do well. So I don't know if this is more of a comment than a question, but then in retrospect, I think it's a terrible benchmark. And also to say that you're doing better than Rhodesia, because that's not really saying something. A question I asked a couple of months back was, the targets are very high. Are you going to reach them because the budget is minuscule? And the answer to the question was no. So that's why I'm asking this. Why are you putting up targets for yourself if you can't reach it? And then lastly, on the salary scales, I'd like to know if the salary scales, because it's just a table, it doesn't exactly say who and where, I'd like to know if the salary scales include the advisors or the specialized advisors, and as well as to which, where on the scale, 1, 2, whatever. Okay. And then also whether a specialized advisor or advisor is a permanent position. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is a very simple question. When we come to the tools of trade that we were told about, if someone could just tell us or remind us what those tools of trade are, at what cost, and from which budget.
Okay. maybe seeing that Nolwazi is also here, can we find out from yourself what exactly was your role in the bureau?
Chair, can I answer then go, because I had requested to leave early. Just the ones that I need to answer.
Oh, you have
they
to leave now.
Continue. Yes, they can continue.
I didn't get the request. It
was on the initial request on the first day, on that same email you read on the first day, on Tuesday.
Okay.
Sorry.
Can we finalize this waste bureau and then you can
okay.
leave?
All right. So can I then quickly answer the few questions on the question by Honorable Hadebe? The staff that was appointed in October was the specialist for transport logistics, Lloyd Rapatiela, a micro collector and micro depot specialist. Those are the two people. It's Ngebo Nginizana and Mashoto. Is it Gegela or Gegela? Gegela. And then the fourth person is the waste information officer, Mashudu Masenya. It's with an H, I think it's Tsonga. Okay, that was in October. Those are the four people. And then the Honorable Makubela question, I want to say that we can revert back to the minister because the department officials found themselves in a difficult position for having put forward that legal opinion because she said she had not signed off on it. So I'm then saying I can put that in writing because that now is affecting me because the staff reports to me. So that is what the department has discussed that opinion. It's a committee that must decide how it deals with it. But as indicated, its status from our side, we thought there is alignment with what is being presented today. But she has not tabled it formally. So I think it will be difficult for her to say she's going to withdraw it. I can withdraw it myself because it's the officials that brought it. So I will have to follow that with the...
I think what Honorable Makubela was saying is that if the information is that the minister says that this opinion does not have standing, then it must be the minister who must withdraw the opinion. If indeed it is the minister who says, no, I've not signed on this thing, it must be withdrawn, then it's better if we get a formal communication to say, this opinion has been withdrawn by myself as the minister, as the person who's supposed to sign off on anything that comes to Parliament.
Okay.
So that's what I think Honorable Makubela was requesting.
Okay. I will then try and get that. Hopefully I can get it in writing. Then the next part of the question that, and the other questions will be dealt with by the colleagues, even Mark. I understand the establishment process of an entity, at least with the experience that I've had in the Department of Environmental Affairs. South African Weather Services was hosted in the department for more than a year before it was run separately. So it's part of managing those teething problems. In this case, on the establishment of a bureau, ideally, from where I'm sitting as an accounting officer of environmental affairs now, having nothing to do with the bureau, while our expectation was that it would have been concluded, it would have been established, and it was going to start in early 2018, in this new financial year. We did not anticipate the fact that we were going to have to stop the RDISA plan, and that has been the legal process that was pursued by the minister last year from June. So that is the circumstances of having to then get to a quick operationalization phenomenon. So it is transitional. The only posts that are being filled, Honorable Makubela, are the more critical and priority for enabling the capacity. The Waste Bureau is not meant for tires only. It's all the other waste streams. So we have to get the Waste Bureau prepared to handle, not to implement and operate a plan, however, to then give effect to the functions that are outlined in the law. So that is what we are supposed to work towards. So these are difficulties that I think as officials we did speak about openly in the committee, but we did not expect that it was going to put us in a bit of trouble. And the Honorable Edwards, the questions around uneven distribution between Nolwazi and Andile, you have to answer. Suffice to say, let me respond to the question about the CEO appointment. I would say if what Treasury indicated to us, if the bill would pass, immediately there's an automatic process of listing, and I would say within a month or so. Two, immediately the process of appointment, because the advert was put out initially, but now in terms of the regulations, that advert would have expired. We need to re-advertise. So normally, just from experience, I would say within a period of 3 months, a CEO could be put in place reasonably. And then the jobs in Nolwazi will...
But what stops the CEO appointment now?
The minister is the one that appoints. She said she's not going to appoint. So that is not my...
Even the acting CEO?
Yeah. Well, in the meeting here in committee, she did outline her reasons. So she had said she's not going to proceed until the...
Because there's no legal basis for not appointing the CEO.
Chair, please speak to the minister on this one directly. Please,
okay,
don't ask the person that's already possibly conflicted to answer the question. Kindly request, maybe even if it's a written response directly from the minister on that one. Then my last comment before I leave the meeting. I think I agree with Honorable Steenkamp on the... I mean, the benchmark is not a good benchmark. Of course, we would like to have set the targets are high, and we expect those targets. When a plan that's approved, it has to demonstrate that it will definitely help us achieve those targets. And then on the salary scales, the level where the position of special advisor is not permanent, okay. And the pay scale category that we were paying a special advisor in the... Let me just go quickly to the pay scale. Who has got the pay scale? No? Huh? I'm just going to give the range according to the table. It is on that level, it is between level 15 and 6 CEO. That's where that, so you wanted me to give you the grade level. That's where it is. So the, when you read the table from top going down to the CEO, the amounts go higher. So that's where the range is.
What level is that? 15?
It's 16. It's above. You know, most CEOs earn more than DGs. DGs are level 16 in the public service. So there, it's a range that I cannot. It's not a 16. It's above 16.
So the earnings CEO. Over the
CEO. It's the CEO level over the DGs. DG level. Okay. All right.
So
if that answers you.
So the special advisor has been paid at the salary scale of a CEO?
Yes.
And she's not the CEO?
No, she's not. Legally, she's not.
Okay.
Legally. I cannot appoint a CEO in that fashion. Chair, if I can just remind honorable members, a second means I outlined, enabled in terms of the public service regulations, section 26, and in that, you are allowed to appoint somebody from private sector. So that is the provision that was used and approved in concurrence with the Minister of DPSA. Okay. So that is what is pertaining. A person can be appointed, but it does not take over that role. And a CEO or even a private sector appointee cannot have those powers to in terms of accounting. Because of in the way the public service is structured, it would not have worked even if I wanted it to. All right. So it's more the powers administratively that a private person that's seconded to the department can hold. Yes, that's the CEO. Yeah. That side is the notches. So. As a DG, I start from notch one up to the last notch. Yeah.
But you know, DG, in terms of section 34K subsection 4, mm-hmm. The acting chief executive officer is appointed by the DG. Is it the, okay, section 34J empowers the DG to appoint the CEO in consultation with the minister. The minister must approve the appointment. But the acting, in terms of section 34K4, says if the chief executive officer is unable to perform any of his function, the DG must appoint acting. So if there is a substantive.
Same chair, if Mark is the DDG of the department, before they are appointed, I can't appoint an acting. It's appointed by minister, number one. Two, when they are there substantively, then I appoint the acting person. So it's consistent with the other applications.
All right, who's going to answer the other questions? I've asked the question to Nolwazi.
Nolwazi must answer his question, not mine.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Chair. So your question was, what was my role? So in terms of my contract, and I'm going to read from the contract, it was to assist in the implementation support for the establishment of the Bureau. That sums up the role.
Okay.
I'm reading directly from the contract I had.
So when you're presenting, you're not as an acting CEO?
No.
Okay. Who else is supposed to answer?
Chair, if I can come in also on the aspect relating to the...
Before you leave, DG, can you just wrap up this one quickly before you leave, because I want us to conclude it in your presence. Look, I think Honorable Makhubela raised a fundamental question, whether as we are sitting here, the Bureau is existing or is not existing. Is it operational or is not operational? That's the fundamental question. Has it been? Does it mean because it has not been listed, it does not exist? So for us to answer the subsequent questions, I think we must start from there. In law, it has been established, but is it operational? The DG earlier on said it is operational, but because it has got implications for it being operational. If it is operational, it means it must exist on its own. There must be people appointed, which means, therefore, that there is no legal basis for anybody to refuse to appoint the staff, because the CEO must be appointed. And how the Act envisaged the whole thing is that you start with the appointment of the CEO, and the CEO must then appoint the rest of the staff members. Then you'll have an entity that is operational. Now, if it is operational, it means that that entity must then report to the Director General. But in an instance where it ceases to be operational, the Act talks about reverting. Now, if something reverts, it means it has existed and is no longer existing, the powers must then revert to the DG. Because the Act says the DG must be the accounting authority, meaning that they appoint the Bureau account to the DG. But you see, what was problematic, DG, is when you are both the accounting authority, but you are also exercising the functions of the Chief Executive Office. Which was problematic. And our reading of the Act is that if it is operational, therefore it is operational, it must exist as an entity on its own and report to yourself. Only if it becomes not operative, then some of the powers, including the Chief Executive, revert back to the Chief Executive, to the DG. So I think that is a fundamental question that I think we must then answer. But seeing that we also don't have other answers, for instance, to the minister on why the Chief Executive Officer is not appointed, because the position was advertised. So we might have to have a follow-up to discuss that as well, that particular aspect. And I think it will also give us time to get an official correspondence regarding the withdrawal of the other legal opinion. And probably we may also have to be punished with the reasons for the withdrawal of that opinion as well. But in the meantime, I think one thing that I'm very uncomfortable with, DG, is the delay in the selection of the industry waste, what do you call it, waste management plans. Because now the department is proceeding with the, should I say the department or the bureau, is proceeding with the appointment of the service providers. Appointment, yeah. You are going to appoint the service providers. Now, what will then be the role of the plan if you are going to appoint? Because essentially, once you conclude this process, what will then be the role of those companies that will be managing the plan? Because it is them who must indicate what, how are they going to collect the waste tires from source or wherever, how are they going to store them, how are they going to transport them, how are they going to process them. That, all of it must be in the plan. So if you appoint and this appointment is for 3 years, what then? I mean, you are preempting what these other plans are supposed to execute. So I've got a fundamental problem with that approach, and I think let's also discuss that when we come back again. For now, I think we will advise that probably you must look at suspending that process until we get to engage here, so that we get to be clarified of all those issues. So that will be my view, that delay that process until that we come back. If we have to schedule something urgently, we can do that. But that meeting will require that the minister must also be present. In the meantime, I've also asked that we must get a copy of the presentation that was made on that day, and then the transcript. So we would not be able to get copies of the transcript urgently, because you know that the impression that we had was what the one that I was explaining. And if it is not, we also have to satisfy ourselves that we are under the wrong impression. There was no such introduction that was made to the committee. But I know that from where I'm seated, that's all what I got, and generally that was the impression that was existing at the time. So it will allow us also to get that DG, and then once we are ready, we can communicate, and we'll ask that the minister also be present.
Can, so I'll request them to be excused. I don't know, Linda, whether you and Mark want to comment on the legal questions. The procurement process, Chair, is not appointment. So procurement process will have to conclude. When you don't appoint, also we write back to Treasury to say these were the, because that is going through the departmental adjudication processes. On the 1st of October, when there is no plan that's approved, work must continue. And that is how we are managed. Even when the new plans are going to take place, if they were appointed before REDISA terminated, they were going to have to take into account what was operational. It's unlike when you have a completely new plan that has got the, where there are no other existing infrastructure. So in this case, there's liability that must be managed into the future, and there is also the infrastructure, and that is more the unfortunate situation in the current setup. But we can always report at that point. It would be useful to have the meeting by, say, the end of, before the end of September then, so that we know at that point what is the real status. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, the other option is to also ask Treasury to extend by another year, knowing that within that period we'll be able to finalize, after having clarified all these issues that we are raising here in Parliament. Because I don't want us to understand you, DG, to be saying, in any case, despite all these issues that you are raising, we will proceed with our procurement processes, because I don't know whether that is the message that you are communicating, or what you are saying is that we should have a follow-up discussion sooner, because there is an express view that that process should not be concluded until we clarify all of these issues that are outstanding.
That's fine, Chair. I think we can clarify, but the challenge is processing. The others put stop, but processing additional capacity that is existing when you have liability of full depots currently is an environmental problem. So at least
the current contracts that Treasury has extended, can't you?
You need, there is new capacity that Regisa did not contract. There's available capacity in the country currently, which has been approaching the department and the minister, and when we look at the documentation that they submitted, they had engaged Regisa, but their contracts were never concluded. And we cannot bring them back door. Treasury said they must compete in an open process. So on processing particularly, there is going to be a problem. Others can be extended, but processing, you need new capacity to actually deal with the challenge of processing and even some of the terms of the processing capacity. But I think we can have a session, a follow-up session, so that you fully then appreciate that. Because right now also I cannot preempt to say this is the capacity that now is available from. We will only know once those that tender process is concluded, how much capacity is in the country.
Okay. So I guess then we'll prioritize that session for early September, so that we can be able to clarify. It's a concern for us, and why is it a concern, DG? It's for reasons that we have raised in the past about Regisa, how it dealt with its own thing, the transition, and the need for us to avoid some of the mistakes that happened in the past. Because if we are moving that way, we along the same path, we will have almost similar problems, if not more, than what issues we experience by Regisa. So it's important to proceed with caution after having all of us clarified ourselves that you are on the right track, and then you can always proceed. We won't interfere with the operational things in the department, but for now I think there are just too many questions that needs to be sorted out. Okay, we are done with this one. Thank you very much. We will then adjourn for about 10 minutes. Yeah, let's adjourn for 10 minutes, and then whilst the board is going to be setting up.
Chair, is the board here in its entirety, or they are under the impression that they are going to be here later on?
I don't know. I saw the secretary is around. Do we have all board members here? Okay.
But I need to give the presentation. I'm so off the line. Oh, okay.